So it's my pleasure to introduce again Dan Garcia from Berkeley, who will be giving us a summary of how things went in the last year.
Thanks so much. So I think I came back summer of 2010. So I think it's about a year and a half since I spoke here in this same stage talking about this very similar topic, the CS10K project, APCS principles, and our Berkeley initiative called Beauty and Joy of Computing. So I just want to figure, since I'm here locally with my parents, my wife's parents in town, I would just give a talk and just kind of share you an update on what's happening. A lot of things have happened, and it's interesting. It's a very interesting and important project. So I'm not Jan Cooney, but I have been blessed with being able to provide her slides. We presented at the Grace Hopper Conference on this topic at a session, so I'm going to summarize her talk. Again, if you have questions, email her. No, I'll try to answer those. And then we'll go to Amy Briggs, who is one of the PIs on the AP Principles project, and then I'll go into our project and kind of talk about what we've done since then. So, hope this works. Bink! So, I think, and let me just add my little side. You can read, I don't read slides. So I think that the CS10K project is the most important project that I've seen in my lifetime in computing, to fundamentally transform the face of computing. Here's what's broken right now with computing in the world, in the U.S. at least, I would say. Underproduction of degrees, underrepresentation of students, underrepresentation of underrepresented people in the community, and lack of presence in K-12. So, degrees. This is a graph of projected annual openings and the actual number of degrees earned. We are direly underproducing. And you ask anybody in a Google or at a top software firm, and they are hiring physics majors because they'll take a smart physics person who can code and make them a computer developer rather than, and they prefer to have a developer who's gone through the CS program, but short of that, they'll take somebody from another degree and bring them over because we are underproducing it. So they're going international. They're not, the U.S. really has, that giant sucking sound is the sound of all those jobs not being filled. You've probably seen this before. You've probably seen this graph before, many of these graphs you've seen. This is the percentage of, this is the number of intended majors, and I guess it's the percentage of those folks. And literally this line is almost zero. It's incredible how low this is. And we had, you know, the big boom, and people are returning to computing in the, if you look, this number is, you know, 2008. Right now, you're going to see a sweep back up here. So there's some excitement that people are coming back to computing. Hopefully the numbers here are similar to that. Is that the case? Yeah. Your intro courses are kind of getting more and more filled. It's true for Berkeley. It's true for Stanford. In fact, Stanford is now at their historic high. Just in the time of the dip to now, they are now, the numbers at Stanford are blowing up. It's really incredible. And we'll talk a little bit about the numbers in the online courses. There's a big hubbub about Stanford's free online courses. I'll talk a little bit about that at the end, which is exciting. But anyway, the numbers are coming up. So they're hopeful. We're not down at the bottom, because again, this graph ended in 2008, but we're not fully back yet. And there's also a lag between the coasts. The kind of, you see the coast come up, and then the middle of the country kind of lags a couple of years. We've seen that for numbers from before. This is supposed to be a nice PowerPoint thing where there's four random, here's the four fields of the AP, and here's four graphs, and which match which to which. And you notice the one that's, at least in the gender side, the most underrepresented of women, 19% are taking computer science, and everything else is basically flat. And you know, you think of all the exciting, wonderful, change-the-world things you can do with computer science, and yet we're not at all doing that at the AP level, because right now the AP course that exists right now in computer science is only Java programming. It's the details and minutiae of Java, and it's not about all the beauty and joy that you can do with computing. And this is, I think, why we're seeing those numbers play out. Because stats and calculus, I think it's more interesting to take stats and calculus in terms of the reasons people take courses. There's a lot. This AP is broken. This slide is to tell you that current AP is really broken. This is just all numbers to kind of push your point of why we need to make a change. So here's the percentage of field percentage of STEM undergrads, and here's this red line of computer science, which has now gone down and kind of hovering around 20%-ish or so. In terms of underrepresented, that was the gender side. In terms of underrepresented minorities, the numbers are also really poor. So, you know, 49 of 1,600 PhDs were awarded to African Americans or Hispanics. So that's, you know, a big chunk of who in the U.S. are the underrepresented minorities, and look at the small numbers of those. And it's the dwindling pipeline. We've seen this before. It's a sad number, but 10% of bachelor's degrees, 5% of masters, and 3% of PhDs. It's just how many faculty? It's so small. Folks at MIT have done a real study on that and trying to understand why that is. And they think if you just wait time, the numbers will eventually come up because they've made some changes and they've looked at those numbers on the gender side, and you see those bad numbers 30, 40 years ago, and now they're much better from the gender equality side at MIT. And they're saying, well, now we're seeing the same thing on the underrepresented ethnic minority side, but just delayed by 20 years or so. So they think that going forward, it's hopeful, but it's still very slow growth. It's really slow growth. And in K-12, this is something that I really, stepping back, I was not a K-12 person. I've always been focused on undergraduate education. That's what I've been doing since I got to Berkeley 20 years ago. It's been enough arrows are pointing to K-12 that my eyes have been awakened to K-12 is where the action is. Now, in the last couple of years, all my efforts have gone to K-12, and that's what this is about. So I've got to engage with the CS10K project, engage with the CS Principles project, and engage with trying to take my intro course for non-majors to all the K-12 places I can. I'll talk about that. So lack of presence in K-12. So the percentage of U.S. high school students taking STEM courses has increased over the last 20 years. Woohoo! Except for us. Yeah, not so good. So, there's a lot of problem. There's graphs which show this great growth of every single field, and this is supposed to be a PowerPoint thing, but she gave me a little PDF. So all these numbers, AP biology, sciences, everything's going up, and then here's the low little red guy on the bottom who, with population growing, everything's growing with population, except CS, which is population is actually dropping if you count the fact that, more students are taking AP than they did 20 years ago. So, high school is the key. We believe that high school is where we're losing them. High school is now, every arrow points to high school. It's really interesting. To fix all this problem, you fix high school, you'll make a big dent. That's the idea. That's Jan's big pitch. And she says if middle school isn't a space, you might lose them by middle school, but you can bring them, they feel like you can bring them back into high school. If you only work in middle school and then don't do anything in high school, you can lose them and then they won't come into college. So the idea is make high school awesome, make high school great. The CS principle, the CS10K project is exactly aimed at that. It is develop a new and effective high school computing curriculum. Okay, so exciting, engaging, real, showing not just the programming side, in fact, almost de-emphasizing the programming side from where we have been in terms of JP Java, and thinking about computing and society, the big ideas, computational thinking. That's the big idea. So the hope, why is it called CS10K? Well, it's a chicken and egg. You can't just say, here's a course, but we have no teachers and nobody's teaching it. You have to have a course and you have to have teachers teaching it, but you have to build them both at the same time. It's kind of this weird kind of bootstrapping problem. So the goal is to create this amazing curriculum and then train and get engaged 10,000 new teachers to teach this amazing curriculum. Each teacher on average is teaching 10 students if you kind of work across the U.S. That's 100,000 students that we haven't seen before. Right now, look at back numbers. The numbers before were, look at this, we're at, less than 20,000. If we can get 100,000 taking this new AP, now we're up in this range. We only move one bar. We're not even close to AP Bio and AP this, but at least we can move quite a bit from where we are now, which is about 10 to 15. So that's the idea. This new course is called CS Principles. That's the idea. AP CS Principles. The current one is called APCS. It's all about Java programming. There's talks in the works of how that's going to evolve and now that this course comes online. But APCS Principles is the idea. 2015 is the launch date. So we're getting close. We're now 2012, right? We started talking about this in 2009 probably. But now we're 3 years away, and 2015 may lead to 2016. But the hope is the thing is ready to launch and ready to go. So the question is, why are we focused on the AP? Why is that the place to go? Why can't we make the changes at the state level other ways? Well, it is a couple of reasons. The number one thing is it's the single point of national leverage. There are 50 states, 50 different policies of what happens, what's the core for what. Now, there is a movement to get the Common Core in there, but there really are 50 different states and 50 different fights to have. And the idea is if you make a new AP, you make this change and 50 states get affected all at once. That's the only way to make it happen. So that's the exciting piece. You also have fidelity replication. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with the Exploring Computer Science. Exploring Computer Science, it's the movement from Jane Margolis coming out of LA Unified. There's a book called Stuck in the Shallow End. Great book, Stuck in the Shallow End, anybody? Anyone? Okay, Bueller. So the hand reaching up, it's an African-American boy's hand trying to reach up, and it looks like he's drowning because he's reaching up and there's a mouse dangling and he can't reach it. And they're making a connection, the book makes a connection between the high rate, percentage-wise, of African-Americans who drown, who die of drowning, young children die of drowning, versus everybody else. And why is that? It's access to pools when you're young to know how to swim. And they're making a connection, Jane Margolis makes a connection with, it's this equity issue. It's like the access to computing. You can't get into computing if you don't have access to it. If you have no computing course in your high school, how are you going to even know about it? And that's the reason nobody's going in. That's why the numbers are so bad. They don't even know about it. They don't even have a chance to realize how awesome it is. So that's this wonderful book I recommend to everyone, Stuck in the Shallow End. Follows up, you know, Unlocking the Clubhouse. Margolis has another book about CMU's gender issues. So the point is, Exploring Computer Science is not an AP. And it's this amazing curriculum that we're thinking in California of having in part of our 10th grade, and then the APCS principles will be 11th grade, and AP Job will be a 12th grade. We had this wonderful California movement to try to get these three courses in the last 3 years. Three courses in CS in high school, awesome, right? Exploring Computer Science doesn't have fidelity replication, which is, we say, come have a seminar with us. Come learn on the summer how to teach this new course. And you all learn it, you get engaged, you do some CS Unplugged activities, you teach that thing. And then you go back, and then you teach it one way. And then the next year, it kind of morphs away. And next year, morphs away. By the time four year down, you're doing PowerPoint the whole year. And they have no way, right now, they have no infrastructure to kind of make sure that you're going to keep teaching the same course and validate that that is the same course being taught the way they intended it to be taught. You have an AP, there's this fidelity, which is this exam at the end of the year that everyone has to be able to teach, you know, to take, and sure, you can teach to the test, but the idea is that's a way to make sure everyone across the country is kind of having the same course. So that's a really important thing, another thing that the AP buys you. Already there's 2,000 College Board audited teachers, so already there's a group we can start with. And AP is really excited because we can have it carry college credit. The idea is, if you were taking this course and did well, a 4 or 5, you go to a university or a college and they have a non-majors course in computing, and bam, there's your AP that gets you out of that course and kind of moves you on. So there's credit or placement. Placement is if you needed that course, you can jump past it, and credit just means you can go into the big ball of credit that you can often carry with you and can get you towards your 200 units or 400 units of credit, whatever, however that is counted for your school. So AP is an exciting place. CS Principles is the movement. It's engaging, it's rigorous. They mentioned so many times, rigorous. The AP has to be, this can't be a soft, squishy thing where everybody gets a 5. This has to be rigorous, where there's a real exam, might be essays involved, there might be a portfolio. There's a movement down to make this a portfolio course, which means you do some project and then you bring it with you and you somehow print out the code or you bring it the runnable thing and you submit that and that's your submission that gets graded. It's pretty exciting. The fundamental that you're focusing on the fundamentals, not on a particular language. You say, well, Dan, what language is it? There is no language. This is going to be pseudocode, possibly. Here's the idea, right? Pseudocode on the exam, and you're learning whatever. If your teacher wants to teach you in processing, blush, that's fine. How about Scratch? Wonderful. How about BYOB, which is what our project is? Wonderful. How about Alice? Wonderful. How about, you know, something else that's Python? Wonderful. Let's go with that. Whatever it is, in theory, that's going to funnel you into some common exam and do well in some common exam. So that's going to be really interesting how folks write those questions to some generic set of pseudocode that's, you know, what kind of operators can you use that's common across all these 10 different things. So that's exciting. So here's the timeline. We're now, right at the close of this, we're now doing pilot round 2. I was part of pilot round 1. I remember coming back and saying, you know, Berkeley was chosen pilot round 1. We're really excited about this. And I kind of said, we're just starting now. We haven't done the pilot. The pilot's happening just after. I came to talk to you in June, and the pilot was that fall. So I'll tell you how that went. They did a survey. They went around. They said, do you believe this is the right thing? And they had a whole series of attestation where people, deans and chairs, said, we believe in this AP, and that was required for them to move forward. You can't just build this house of stakes and hope it's going to work. You have to kind of say, let's get strong, you know, we've raised the flag in the flagpole, who's going to salute? And then enough folks have said, let's salute, we think this is a good thing. So they gave a lot of feedback, which affected what the big ideas and what the principles were. So anyway, that's exciting. We're now at the stage of pilot 2 rounds are going on right now. That's pretty exciting. So that's it. Here's where the pilot sites are, all across the country. Pilot round 1 was 5 universities, okay, 5 kind of forward-thinking universities. Pilot round 2 is 10 forward-thinking universities and 10 partnered high schools. what they did was they kind of added on. For each of the five universities, they said, here's some extra money, go find a local high school to work with you. That's kind of an add-on. They said, no. From the beginning, you come in holding hand in hand. You as a university hub and your high school partner walk in hand in hand with the application. And so they chose 10 of those. So there are 10 sites, each of which comes in pairs. I don't know if the two stars overlap, but they each come in pairs in theory. And that's exciting. That channels some of the activities that are coming out of the CSTA chapter. Computer Science Teachers Association is where the local high school teachers kind of have professional development with monthly workshops, usually at the university. So that is connected in that way. And so these 10 are going on. And two of them are near me at Stanford. Nick Parlante is running one of his. So the CSTK project, in summary, is all the course, make the course awesome. The standards are part of the exam. The teacher preparation is going to be the hard part. How do you make this happen? CE21 is an NSF call for participation that we were happy to get awarded one of them. So we have been throwing some money to try to make our Beauty and Joy of Computing course be fitting into this. So try to train teachers to teach our course, which again would be one of the courses that would be accessible for the APCS. Making this happen in schools is beyond NSF's job, but NSF is putting some money together to try to make this CS10K happen, and that's where Jan has, she said, I can't just say, let's do something, here's some money to make this happen as well, and that's what the CE21 is about. All right, let me jump in quickly now to Amy Briggs, who has... who is the PI on the CS Principles project. So this is a project working with the College Board to develop this new course. So that I'm not channeling her slides. CSPrinciples.org is a great reference. It's the starting point for this course. If you're interested in this, this is the one URL you need for this. And there's links from this to my site and all that stuff. So this is really the one URL you need to remember today if you're taking any notes. CSPrinciples.org. So a couple of these have been mentioned. This, by the way, we gave this talk all together at Grace Hopper, so Amy followed Jan, and so I'm kind of being Amy now as well. So it's not just programming. In fact, nowhere in here says programming. This is about a first course, central ideas, the practices in computational thinking. People keep saying, what does that mean? That started to kind of started to be described in some of the documents for this. As well as other people trying to do that, to describe that as well. How it changes the world. Really, we're looking, there was a WGBH survey of what messages work for young people, and many of those messages fed into this. You know, changing the world is what a lot of people who are young are excited about doing, and if we say, by the way, you can change the world with computing, then that's going to resonate with those folks for whom that's an important thing. And creativity. It's so exciting to see creativity as part of the charter of this course. I love that. I really love that. Cooperation, not competition in that sense. So it's wonderful. So appealing to a broad audience. It's your father's computing course. This is completely different than you've ever seen before. This is about rethinking what you can do in that first course in computing to broadly appeal to students. And the goal is not just to get 100,000, but to get 100,000 people who look very different from the current students who are taking the current AP, right? It really is broadening participation, widening that net who can take this course and get excited about this course, and then maybe get excited about computing. So really, at the end of the day, we're trying to grab more students into our major. So these are some of the faces of people who are involved in this course. You may recognize some of them. Mark Guzdial, here's Amy. Yes, indeed. Yes. Why can't see anything?
Next to Amy.
Next to Amy. All right. Yes. Excellent. So it's awesome. People are really excited about this project, and it's a really important project. It's it's Chris Stevenson from CSTA, executive director. People all across the country are excited about this. This is really a U.S. project, but it's really very exciting. He's the commission. He's people who are in the back rooms developing assessment items and thinking about polishing those big ideas, polishing the computational thinking practices, all of that. So these are important, really good people doing that. And notice that there's some high schools in here, right? So that's really important to us. Not just a college-driven thing that we hand in the high school's lap and say, go ahead, good luck. They're involved from the beginning. And the advisory group, I'm part of the advisory group to look at, as his friend, to look at to say, okay, you do the stuff and then show it to us, and then we'll tell you whether, you should steer the ship left or should steer the ship right. So here's the timeline. Again, I showed you before. Moving forward, here's where we are. There's going to be a pilot 3 coming out. We said portfolio-based assessment, which is great. The framework is going to be finalized once we've kind of gone through two rounds of playing with it. Lock the framework down, develop the exam. They're starting to just slowly develop some exam items now, and some assessment items, and throw those under pilot twos. I haven't seen them yet. And then eventually we launch 2015 or 2016. So there was a curriculum study and attestation process where people blessed this. I mentioned that before. Here are the two ideas that feed into this course, big ideas and practices. So it's the content and the skills that all feed into this. And again, csprinciples.org have all the things. Here are the seven big ideas. We had seven big ideas and seven practices. It ended up being seven and six after some editing. But this is it. Look at this. Number one, computing is creative. That's awesome. I mean, the other thing that, as the advisory group was told, use the 95-5 principle, which is that perfection is the enemy of the good, and if you're going to wait to get 100% on this, then you're never going to get everybody to sign on. But if you can say, look, give me 95% and I'll be happy with that, the 5% I can abstain from, not disagree, just abstain from, then we can move forward. And so there's a 95-5 rule here. It's like, is this 95% good enough for you? And the feeling from all the advisory group was, yes, let's move forward with this. And people are universally feeling that that's actually the case. It's really great. Abstraction, fundamental here, data information, algorithms, programming. So it's like 1/7 of it is the coding part. It's really interesting, although obviously developing it here is number four as well. Internet, and this used to be systems. And so that was one of the things the advisory group fed back to them and said, like, this is systems. What do you mean by systems? Do you mean MapReduce? Do you mean all the things that run the back end? Do you mean all this stuff? No, systems, let's just say the internet. That simplifies the whole thing. Because really that's what they meant, to be honest. And then the global impacts. Pretty exciting stuff. So that's the big ideas. And here are the practices. Connecting computing to life and to other fields. Developing artifacts. Again, this is where the programming comes in. Abstracting, making, designing, developing abstractions. Analyzing, communicating, and working in teams. That's awesome. This is really great. And the first time I've ever seen somebody step back and say, what would you like to see, you know, from 10, 20 miles up? These are really powerful, important things. And say that this is the first thing you're learning in this course, and you're getting excited about working in teams and being creative. We love it. It's great stuff. So most of us really, really love this stuff. Here's an example of a learning objective. They can evaluate them analytically and empirically. So now, what does that mean? What is that characterized by? And this is kind of, this is what feeds the process. This is all an AP thing, the College Board thing, how you develop these new courses. It comes evidence statements. And so here are the ways that you prove the evidence statement, right? The student work is characterized by, well, evaluation of efficiency, location of error, so debugging here, explaining how something works, and maybe possible other solutions for that, with possible different efficiencies related to those things, okay? So let's see. So syllabus, course alignment, this is expectations for this. Let's see here. Here are the sites of Pilot 1. Here are the highlights of Pilot 1. This is, again, so now I'm not summarizing. Now I'm going back. June we spoke about, I'm not going to be a new pilot. I'll let you know how it goes. This is how it went, essentially. We had a massively diverse population. We had 80 students. Beth Simon at UC San Diego decided to teach this course. She's something called Sixth College, which is a whole group of students come in. They get recruited to different colleges. Sixth College fed into this, and they all have taken Sixth College a computing course. She made her pilot the computing course. So her pilot size was 600. Now, anybody who knows about how pilots work, things mess up, right? You're not going to get it right the first time. But she was not getting it right, with 600 students being affected by this. Incredible. And she did a great job from what I've seen, so it's pretty impressive. She did a very different thing with a lot of clicker questions, a lot of discussions. She did a very, Eric Mazur, if you know his work at Harvard, that was an NPR thing just recently about the lecture is old school and now it's all about peer instruction and he's transformed his physics classes from being lecture to be, do the reading in advance, it's required, which most of us don't really require, and then come in, and here's a question. What happens to the ball? Does the ball fall down, fall up, move left, move right? Now talk to yourselves, talk to your neighbors, and spend 20 minutes talking about it, and then vote, and I look at them, and then we'll talk about the answer, and then here's another problem, and problem, that's the entire lecture. So he's transformed it to a peer instruction model of learning, effective for physics. Whether it would work for CS or not, yet to be seen. But she was doing that. She was doing that kind of a thing where a lot of discussion is happening. So there's a diverse set of tools. We used BYOB. Some folks used Scratch. Tiffany Barnes also used our work. So we actually partnered together where we shared work together. It was really quite nice. And Tiffany is now part of our NSF proposal. So we partnered together. Some folks used processing, not Python, but processing. So here's a pile of two sites. If you're curious, here's who they are. You saw the star map, and here's where they are. Here you can see here's some in Illinois, Georgia. There's Charles, who's great at Georgia Tech here. I don't know everybody on this list. I know most of them, but not everybody here. I know Andrew. Andrew's our old grad student friend from Berkeley. She's at University of Wisconsin doing this. I'm really excited about that. Manuel, many people know Manuel Perez Quiñones at Virginia Tech and some other folks. So anyway, great stuff, good people, really good people being chosen for Pilot 2. I'm excited to see what comes out of that. And so this is kind of a summary of what you're going to see. This is a summary of what it can be. It can be Alice, it can be Scratch, BYOB, it can be Python, there's big data in there, there's collaborations, all these things are part of it. It really is a wordle. This is a poor man's wordle of all the things that can be. All right? So that is the principles course, and now, Bink, I will switch over to mine and talk about our course. So our course is called The Beauty and Joy of Computing, and again, 2 out of the 5 pilots were exactly this course. So it was really 40% of the folks' initial pilots. Here the folks have done it. We've now just finished 240 students in that course. We have another 240 signed up this spring. So it's really getting bigger and bigger. It's exciting. That's kind of the steady state, about 250 a semester. We're really excited about that. And then you can't see this. It's red on blue in a bad projector, but it says online too. Which means we're going to go online, and we'll talk about that at the end. We're really excited about that. We applied for some funding from Lockheed Martin, got a grant to broadening participation. Lockheed Martin says, we love it. This course can really help broaden participation. So they gave us a grant for development of the course. We applied to a curriculum innovation contest at Berkeley. We won that one. We were chosen for an online pilot in addition for the AP. There was a UC, all 10 campuses, there was a challenge and a grant saying, if you want to try to take a course online, we see that online is the future, let's try to do this survey and try to do a first run on that. And so they asked for some courses to be submitted for this. And we submitted our course and were chosen. So we won 25 courses across all 10 campuses. So this is a big deal, and we're excited about going live fall 2012. So a year from now, I will have finished my first online course I've ever done, and I'll tell you how that goes when I perhaps I come back in a year from now. BJC Berkeley EDU is the only URL. So you need 2 URLs, csprinciples.org and bjc.berkeley.edu is all you need to know. So this came out of the Passion, Beauty, Joy, and Awe movement, which is a 6C movement that Grady Booch was a keynote speaker at 6C, Computer Science Education Conference, if you don't know, one of the SIGs, and he talked about on his slide, we need to emphasize the passion, beauty, joy, and awe that he felt going through his course that he thinks is lacking in courses now, intro courses now. And so that became a session where we talked about, this is back in 2008, the next year we said, hey, let's really channel that and talk about how can we revive that passion. You know, let's not have that keynote go unheeded. Let's talk about what we can do to kind of bring that up. So there was a session which really talked about why it's needed and the crisis in the enrollment, what can do with working for student groups, and I was involved with this. And then there was a Rebooting Computing Summit that Peter Denning did in Mountain View, many of you attended. And the subtitle of that was Magic and Beauty of CS, so I think I was channeling that as well. The next year, there was another 60 panel that I moderated and brought on more folks, and then I did it again, and I did it again. So now I have one more time for 60 2012 coming up. So now we're at Passion, Beauty, Joy, and Awe 5 now. It's kind of a running thing now, which is great. Every year I get to pick some folks who I think are really doing really fundamental stuff and just moderate them, put them on the stage, and let them share what they've done to extol the Passion, Beauty, Joy, and Awe of computing. So that was the movement of the title of the course. Then Scratch came around the corner, and Scratch, I think, is incredibly well done. Really incredibly. If you haven't played with it, I encourage you to play with it. If you have anybody in the age of, 6 to 15, they should be looking at Scratch as maybe the first time they play with computers and think about programming. There are now 2 million projects, folks. 2 million projects that are online and shared. This is an incredible website which lets you run the project in the browser without any, I guess you have to have Java or Flash, I guess, but anyway, without having to really worry about plugins, because most people have one of those 2 things. And you can just play the project. And if you say, I like this, how do they do that? Normally you run the executable and you don't get to see the source code. Scratch forces you to share the source code when you upload to the website. So you say, download, and all of a sudden in your local Scratch IDE is all the source code. You can see how that's done. So it's never hidden from you. It's an amazing teaching tool. That's how I learned HTML, by looking at the view source and looking at the thing. I guess that does that. I guess B makes it bold. All right. That's how you can learn Scratch the same way. It's an amazing tool. So Scratch is really great. But Scratch is limited. And we looked at Scratch and said, you know, Scratch really isn't ready for university use. You can't build any functions. If I can't say this script of 20 things, wrap it and call it draw square, you can't do that. You can't even do that. Now, the new version of Scratch, Scratch 2, I think it's called, Scratch 2 will have that. Will have, you can do a command block. So I can say these things that you're doing, these commands, draw, move line, pen down, change color, you can wrap that and call it a name. But you can't have a function that returns a value. So you can't have factorial, Fibonacci, any of the count change, any of the things that teach recursion, any of the things that kind of go out and come back and return a number, they don't have that. So we added that. So BYOB stands for build your own blocks, and it adds functions, which can are more powerful than what Scratch is going to have, so they can return numbers. It's done by Jens Munnig, who's a programmer in Germany, an incredible guy. We add generic lists. In Scratch, you only have, here's a global list over here, and you can make more global lists, and you can affect the global list, but you can't return a list. I can take a list as input, but I can't kind of make a list on the fly and return it to you. I can't append to the front. I can't do any of that stuff. We make that. It's just like Scheme. We take the folks from, but Brian Harvey is a Scheme person, so we took all the love that you can do from generic lists and added to that. And you know, if you have lists, you can make anything. You can make lists of lists and any data structure once you have that. Their lists, you can't do that. Their lists can only contain text or numbers. Our lists can contain, oh, let's get other lists, and all of a sudden you can do trees or anything with that. And we add lambda. So we have the idea that a function can be an input, trivially, and a function can be an output. So all the power of lambda from the Scheme days, we added to BYOB, and you get some really powerful higher-order functions, where I can now have a map. You know, MapReduce is this powerful idea that people are learning in the concurrency world is how you program 10,000 machines. We can simulate that in BYOB. You can't do that in Scratch or many other tools. So here is building a for loop. How powerful is your language? Pretty powerful, Dan. Okay, build a for loop. Well, I can use a for loop. What do you mean, build a for loop? Yes, build a for loop. Didn't exist before, and here's a for loop. For I equals start to end, do the action. And here's this. Set I to start, repeat until I is greater than end, run the action. I'm passing in what you're going to do as an input. And now, change I by one. So this works. This becomes this little C-shaped for loop. Which, if you, I mean, I can, I don't know how this is going to affect me. I can zoom in on this a little bit. So now, this for loop says, for I equals 1 to 10, for k equals 3 to 5, say join words I, k for 1 second. And it says, you know, obviously, 1, 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, 2, 3, 2, 4, 5. Beautiful. Okay? It's so seamless, and here's my character saying 2, 5. Pretty cool. Not that this is exciting or fun, but just powerful. Just kind of sharing the power of being able to pass in functions as data.
So I'm curious, maybe you'll get to it in later slides.
Go.
So, you know, there's one level of programming, like a K through 12, where kind of the traditional Scratch is. Then there's this, like, next level that BYOB addresses. Mm-hmm. Did you actually push the students into that, this next level?
Yes.
Like, using Lambda and stuff?
Yes. Here's the question.
So
what do we do? Well, you know, we do the things you're supposed to do for this, for the AP, but we actually think that the AP is, you can do more. That once you have this easy tool, you could do more. Now, I'm not trying to say, let's do Java. Let's try to do the heavyweight stuff. But it is, we find our students have no trouble with recursion, as an example. One of the beautiful things is, draw this flower, draw a fractal tree. And Josh Paley is a high school teacher, and he says, I work with Google in the, I forget the project's called, but where they bring in a high school teacher, and they bring in smart 9th and 10th graders, and he teaches them for a couple of weeks. I forget the name of that project. Google Rise, Google Sage, something like this. Anyway, he brings the kids in, and he has 9th and 10th graders who have never touched computing, and he has these wonderful toothpicks in colors. He says, make a tree. Here's a tree of level 1. Here's a tree of level 2. Tree, 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 which is like 2 level 1 trees here. Here's a tree of level 2. Tree, and then double tree. And he does it. And now do with this. So he has kids in 2 days building fractal trees using BYOB. It's incredible. And these kids are not having trouble. These kids are going out and they're making green trees and pink ones and changing the colors and loving it and knowing recursion, having never learned. We don't hit recursion until week 7 or week 6 or something. And he's got kids in 2 or 3 days playing with the. So I think if done right and done in the right tool, it's not too bad. So, okay. Now, granted, my students are Berkeley students. I don't know whether that affects them, but I have Berkeley English majors, right? So, you know, there's a little bit of like, I don't know whether that brings it back down to the more reasonable side, right? Anyway, rather than Berkeley people who are intended to be CS or something. It might be a different group of kids. So big ideas of computing. This is channeling directly from directly from the AP stuff. Abstraction, algorithms. We add recursion. Recursion actually is in the AP curriculum. It's one of the ways that you can iterate recursion. So that's there. We do this functions as data. So this is the stuff that we've added. We think we're kind of pushing the limit. Of all the pilots, we're the ones pushing the programming big ideas the most. This is the hardest big idea we ever do, functions as data. But actually, it's what's funny is, once you, if I say, make a while loop that has to take numbers in and kind of count something up, and then I say, what if I gave you a map, and you're supposed to just, you know, take a list and double every element of the list. Okay, well, then you have to write a while loop while the I isn't past the size of the list. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, now I give you a map that was written for you, because you don't have to write it all the time. It's written for you. It's given to you. And now, what do? Well, here's a list, and I drag in times two. And that's your work. The simplification of having to abstract away how where the I goes and where the running off the edge of the list is done for you, right? So if I show you how to write map, you show me you can write map once, you never have to write it again. Now you can use it a million times. So that power is really cool. And students actually find it easy. I have students telling me, and I have a video if you want to see. Students tell me, Dan, this higher function stuff is great. I don't want to go back to the while loop anymore. This function, higher order functions is more power. It's easier. I just drag in the times two block and it works. So making it visual can really change things. That's what we believe that BYOB brings to the table that didn't exist before, like, for example, in Scheme, is that visually you can see that. When I drag the function in, I can see it different graphically as it's a function as the input. Map of the function. It's an input right here. I drag it. It looks different. So we do paradigms, concurrency, some distributed computing stuff. On the right side is big ideas of computing. So this is big ideas of programming. Because of computing, we do some demystification, how stuff works. So we explain, people really are into video games, and I explain how you make a video game. How does 3D graphics work? I'm a huge fan of computational game theory, solving board games. That's what I do for my research group, so I share some of that. We have great speakers come in and share what AI, it's not about my particular project, but it's about the whole field of AI. And here's the whole field of HCI, two of the real CS areas that are very hot for students nowadays. Apps that change the world, social implications of computing, saving the world with computing. We have people talk about climate change, and people from Lawrence Berkeley National Lab come down and they say how they use simulations to know about climate change, and that's affecting, you know, policymakers and all that exciting. That's saving the world with computing. It's exciting. Heart simulations and biosimulations. How Twitter, we have, obviously, Bay Area, we have lots of different companies, so I have Twitter, and Pandora came by to show how that works, and students are using Pandora and using Twitter, so that would explain how that works and why that's hard or why their problems are interesting. We talk about what cloud computing is, that's in the vernacular nowadays, make sure the students know what that is, the limits, and the future. In terms of the beauty and joy piece of it, this is the one slide that has a thing. We have a lot of CS Unplug activities in discussion. So we have the next slide will show you how our week breaks down. But in our discussions, where we have face-to-face, about 1 to 30, roughly, students, we have CS Unplugged. We go around, let's pretend to be bits, and it's really fun. Let's take a computer apart, look at how it works, it's cool. Every lab work is done in pairs, so if you're a new student scared about computing, there's a reason you weren't a CS major taking this thing as a non-major, you come in and you got a pair. And now all of a sudden you're confused and your partner's there to help you. And at least if there's two people, you don't get so frustrated that first week. All the projects are in pairs, so there's 2 3-week projects of their own choice. Here's the key thing, of their own choice. That's hard to grade. But it makes a difference for the students. We asked them at the end of the year, does it matter to you that you got to choose your own project? They said, oh my gosh, it does. This really lets me do what was important to me. And that's what we learned from the ECS folks. It's about engaging students what's interesting to them. So their projects are their own choice. And we somehow try to, make it work. And one of the nice things about this course is it's not a curved course. So it's not like I have to have the A's and B's and C's. They can all get an A if they do a great job. And they actually often do on their projects. So that's really nice. And they have a paper, which actually has turned into a blog. We changed the paper, which was students submit a paper, we grade it, give it back to them. We said, why don't we make this social? So we had them write a blog, a single-page blog, and they're forced to read their neighbor's blogs and comment on their neighbor's blogs. And they're graded on their commentary as well as their own blog, which is really cool. So it's nice. So they're forced to read their neighbor's, that's two of them, and then they get to read anybody else's blog they want to. So you get at least 2 comments on your own writing, which is great, as well as the graders. That's it. There's a question there. I wonder if you have the question.
I was just wondering about the pairing. Do you do the pairing, or do they?
There's different schools of thought in how pairing is done.
It seems to me that's one of the difficult things is pairing, especially with 250 people. How are you going to do it?
Right. So what we do is we ask people to try to pair in their own section. So it's really a choice between 1 and 30. And we then also allow people to get 3-person teams. because there's often an odd number or buddies, and they get so. And also, we've encouraged. I sent out an early email saying, you know, folks, you're enrolled in my course this coming spring. Class starts next week. You know, there's a lot of partnership. Go find your best friend and bring him in too. And I've been doing this a lot, and all of a sudden I'm getting more and more numbers of people coming in with their friends. And that's amazing. They can now work with their buddies they already know. So I push that, and if they don't find one, I ask the TA to kind of work out. Who's missing a parent? You know, we try to, you know, make it all work. So the TA's job is to help.
We're talking about the fact that people who come with no background are paired with people who have background. That's it.
You're not supposed to be in this course if you know how to program. The part of this, it's a good question. The question was, you know, what do you do with if the abilities are like this? And the point is, this course is for people with no programming background. And every once in a while, someone will sneak in who's done some stuff on the side, and unfortunately, they'll be better than everybody else, and it's not really that fair. But that doesn't happen as much as you'd think. We really do push people out and say, like, you're not supposed to be here if you can program at all. Because there's a whole group of self-paced courses which lets you learn a language. There's the major course called 621A, which is in Scheme, and now moving to Python. It's a big, huge, I mean, it is trying to drink from the fire hose kind of a course. It's massive, and it's really hard. I need to say, it's very hard. Anybody who's programming and want to be a CS major, we push them into that course. We say, this is not for you, because it's going to be too remedial for you. Even though the people are going there saying, oh, but you have such cool stuff. I want to learn about this cool stuff. I would miss that and that's true. That's broken with our system right now, is you'd miss all this good stuff. If you had any programming experience, you'd miss that. You kind of get it back because there's a social implications of computing course that you can get it later, but you don't get all the, you know, in the fun way of doing it in our way. So there's that. We also have, I said, the self-paced set of courses. So if you kind of don't want to be a major, but you want to go on past this course, where can you go? And there's learn Python, learn, you know, learn Unix. There's other languages you can do if you are just a programmer. So if you, you know, did one something in high school, you did C++ in high school, then and you don't want to be a major, there's these learn other courses. So there's other places for people to go that are not this. So that's nice, and that kind of relieves the pressure valve for people having to force their way getting here. It's a good question, though. Did you have a question?
Yeah, on the project. So a lot of times with student projects, they don't know what to do. They might need some help figuring that out. So
great point.
How do you help them figure that out?
So what we do is we suggest that they spend a lot of time on the Scratch site, looking at what projects can do. You know, can you? A lot of people do games. We added the idea that, and we actually had them a reading assignment in which I think it was a CACM article. We have, I can show you the link, which says social computing. It is about making a project that makes a difference, that really can change the world. It has a user base that's going to be affected by this. And so, you know, a group in chemistry might need a simulation, so you work with them as your clients to do this. So we actually give them bonus points if they have any relevance. And so that we have, using two metrics. So one is a lot of relevance versus a little. Like, you know, does it really can change the world or not? And one is how many people would affect. So if you have a lot of relevance that affect a lot of people, that's the most, and you get the most bonus points. But if it's a lot for this, it's very, very so we have the product of these two factors here. But we also, one of the things that we've done in recent times is come up with a suggestion of here are 5 or 10 a menu. We don't choose this, but here's an example of what you could do, and then you can choose your own as a main thing. But that's a very good point, and it's come up from our TA group. Here's our format. 7 hours a week of contact. Who has a course that's 7 or more hours of contact with their students a week? This is the record. We went to Berkeley, we looked at the entire catalog, and we said, what is the most time with them that's done in legal, not legal, but it's allowed on the Berkeley campus? They said, well, chemistry has this 7 hours. We said, done, 7. We'll take it. So 7 is the most. No one even touches us. And because of that, 7 times 14 is 98. That means 98 hours for this course. If we looked at the 5 pilots across the country, you know, San Diego, Oz, there was Denver, there's Charlotte. The next closest one was like 50 for a whole course. Many courses are quarters. If you're in San Diego, you're in a quarter, and you have 2 or 3 hours. That's 30 contact hours with your student versus might almost 100. So we could do all these things. It's really like this is pushing the limit in terms of not only the level of the content, the depth, but also the number of contact hours total. So lecture and then 2-hour lab. This is a lab. Mike Clancy, we mentioned before Mike Clancy of the Python Pascal days. Mike Clancy is a big proponent and won the ACM award for part of this work, for the service award, the 60 service award, for lab-centric, to pushing the lab-centric model. Got a couple NSF grants to push that as well. So lab-centric computing means that you don't learn, it's not a sage on a stage, it's a guide on the side. That came up in the Eric Mazur NPR article, NPR interview recently was, I think of myself more as a guide on the side than a sage on the stage. And that really is the idea that we've embodied here, which is you learn most by doing. You learn most by hacking at it and failing and getting help and not having 10 hours hitting your head against the wall by yourself in a homework, but saying, oh, I'm stuck here. Excuse me, and all of a sudden some lab assistant comes around and some helpful graduate of the course a year before comes by and helps you out. So that's the model in lab, where we have lots of these good activities, little programming things, read this, watch this mini video, all these fun different lab activities right there in a safe place with a lot of lab assistants, what we call sharking, which is walking around sniffing for confusion. So he just walks, just circling, just dun, 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 and I see somebody, oh, and jump right there. Because a lot of times if someone's sitting in the corner, you don't want to kind of get them, make them go up. But if they're right there, you can ask the question. So by circling all the time, continuously, and by feeding that with all the graduates from last semester, it feeds into this wonderful pattern of students helping students. It's wonderful. And those students then are the best lab assistants, become the best readers, which are the graders, and those readers, best readers, become the best TAs. And so it's a really nice process that we have and other schools have as well. So lecture, lab, and then a discussion. So it kind of sums up the whole week. Reading is taken from this outstanding book. We really stand on the shoulders of giants. We use Scratch and BYOB, not our stuff. We built the BYOB on top of Scratch because that's so amazing. And Blown to Bits is this book by Hal Abelson and two other folks, Ken and Harry Lewis from Harvard. So MIT Harvard connection there. Blown to Bits, outstanding book. Really, really great way to digest stories, and they explain how search works and cryptography and how bits are everything and how bits change, and the fact that things become digital has changed the world in many, many ways that you don't know. That the students don't know, and hopefully they will after reading the book. So Blown to Bits is an outstanding book. We also have articles from CACM and web, you know, articles from the Wall Street Journal and things that are relevant. You know, there was a recent California ruling that went to the Supreme Court about violent video games, where the California can say you can't have violent video games, and the Supreme Court overruled it, said no, you know, for the same reason you can't dictate, you can have labels, but you can't say kids can't do this, and so kids, if parents want to let the kids watch the violent video games, they can let watch violent video games. You can't say they can't get it from a certain age group. So anyway, the point is, articles, relevant articles and videos, it's really, really great. Current events, every day. Every single day we start lecture, so every lecture, not every day, but every lecture day, 2 days a week, I go to Slashdot or Technology Review or any one of the places, CNN Technology, any place I can get news, you know, dig, wherever it's like hot computing news that's relevant to students. It's really about focusing on things that will be relevant to them. It's about privacy. It's kind of, there used to be a blog that Harry Lewis kept, which is bitsbook.com, I think, that he kind of, anything, he was doing this work for me. But he stopped doing it, he started blogging on other things, and you know, that was one of his projects, he's going on other things. So I, every single class, I will look online, find a thing, and talk about that at the beginning of class. So it's trying to bring computing and relevant things to them, and then talking about it, leveraging that. For example, when Watson came around just the week when our AI week was coming up. Perfect, it's so great. So we walked out, watched some Watson stuff and talked about what does this mean? Can that mean that computers can do anything now? No, that was a specialized application, maybe good for question answery space, but not the world isn't now conquered by computers now, kind of thing. So great stuff. Every resource is free. What do you mean, Dan? There's a book here, right? Yeah, the book has a PDF that you can download for free. But there are articles. Yeah, we got access to all the articles. But the websites are free. Everything is free. But the software, you said software. Yeah, software is free. Every single thing is free, and this is important for high schools. So a lot of high schools, you have, you know, they're underserved, you barely have five computers in the room, there's not a single book. No, there's no cost issue with adding to teach our course. It's awesome. So we're really excited about that.
How did you get free clicker?
We got a grant. For us, we use some of our grant money for that. But in a high school, you buy it from there, and then you pass that and you bring it back. You pass that and you bring it back. The point is you buy 30 clickers and you're done, one-time thing. So you don't have to. You can use vote with your hands or vote with colored index cards. You can do a free the clickers. We just happen to like the clickers because it kind of counts for us who's there and all that stuff. Oops. I think I hit something. There. We use, so you see here, see? Eric Mazur. So this is Eric Mazur, NPR. This is book about peer instruction. We do this in lecture, where we talk, and now he's a multiple choice question, vote. And now you vote, and now you don't know what the histogram is. I get to see how you did, but you don't get to see. And I say, now, talk amongst yourselves. And you go find your neighbor and you talk for 2 or 3 or 4 minutes. and you argue your case, and you argue your case. Why did you say A? I think it's B. And then you get done, and now you vote again. You have to hold your hands, and you have to vote the same vote. You have to kind of, like a Quaker way, you have to come to consensus, and you have to vote. You sing Kumbaya, and then you vote the way it is the common vote. And then we look at that. We look at whether you kind of all come around to the correct answer, or whether you've deviated and got farther away from that, and we stop and talk about it. It's amazing. So we do this as well. It's a really great way to have lecture be active. So this is, and if you borrow our course, you'll see our clicker questions are there. So the people often say this is a dance course. This is really Brian's course in dance course, but really it's Luke, Colleen, Brian, and dance course. These are two amazing grad students, and without whom this course wouldn't exist. So I really need to make sure that you guys know about how great they are. And Colleen's going on the job market soon, and Luke just got a job at Google, so make sure you know about her name. She's really great. So Dan and Brian's course. Here's a testimonial. So we interviewed. I walked out. I gave my final exam. This is after the. This is after the fall 2010 pilot for 2020 pilot. So then two students come up and they said, Dan, I need to tell you something. And I think I'm going to be jacked with a sock full of quarters. Hard exam. No. But they come up to me and say, Dan, I need to tell you something. And they say, Dan, this course meant something. I said, wait, don't just tell me. Hold on. Put the camera. Put it on a tree. Okay, go. Tell me what you wanted to tell me. And they just said, from their heart, this was not at all, I didn't say, come talk to me. It just meant something to you. They just said, Dan, they pulled my shirt collar.
Leaving the $50 bill.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I paid it. The Swiss account on the side was something that Scott was there. So anyway, this is a quote. The class levels was amazing, had a great time. Anyone even remotely interested in computer science to take this course. Justin said, had I taken this course earlier, I would have seriously considered CS as a major. That's so empowering and so great to hear that at the end after putting all this hard work into the course, that the course really meant to this semester students. So, how do they do in terms of demographics? Well, this is at the Grace Hopper Conference I presented this. So, percentage of women in the course is green. These first two slices, first two data points, are the non-majors course in scheme that I taught, but make sure I'm constant. I'm part of every single four of these offerings, okay? So non-majors course in scheme, here's the number of women. So this goes from 35 to 45, okay? So that's just, you know, this is like fall versus spring noise. There's a different people who take in the fall versus spring, but just noise that I can't affect, okay? So nothing happening. Or maybe they heard how great it was and more of them came, whatever that is. Nevertheless, 45, and that stays constant roughly, okay? 45% women, so that's doing great. Our normal intro CS class is 20%, so we're doing amazing in terms of demographics here. This red dot is the percentage of women in the top 22. I just decided 22 kind of fit on the screen, so I sliced it there. Why 22? I don't care. But 22, right? So if there are 45, if there's, you know, 33% women in the class, then it's like a mixture of oil and water. I just read about it. Maybe a mixture of milk and chocolate. Right. If I have, you know, 33% chocolate, and I then scoop the top of it, it should be 30% in the top group, right? It should be the same percentage, whatever up at the bottom group, get 30% chocolate, right? Wherever I scoop, 30%. But look, the women do worse than their percentage. Look how few Fs is a female. This is like my spreadsheet in Excel. How few Fs there are, F is female. Okay, so look. So now, 22%. So out of, you know, 5 out of 22 is about 22%, 25%, okay? The next semester, still worse than their percentage. Let's keep going. These two courses, by the way, are now the courses that we changed. The new exciting course. Oh, I don't know. How many Fs you see here? Okay? So for the same percentage. Look at the green. Green is the same. And look at the percentage of Fs in here, compared to there. So the percentage of women in the top, look at this. They're blowing the men away. And they're doing the same thing here. That's incredible. The GPA average. 3 versus 2.8. 3.14, this is kind of, that's closer there. But that's a big number. This is a full plus or minus number right here. 3.06 to 2.87 is a full plus or minus number. They're loving it. They're doing great. And we are just so happy with that. Now you're going to say, well, Dan, are there more testimonials? So let's go here to this. To this. And I just finished 240 students. At the end of a 240-person exam, it was a hard exam, by the way. I really gave a hard exam this year. 15 students came up to me and said, Dan, can I tell you how much this course meant to me? And I said, do you mind if I put you on film? They said, sure. So I went to the side of the room, and I filmed 15 students saying things like the following.
All right, we're talking to one of the CS10 students who just finished the CS10 final.
Yeah,
Yes, my name is Sarah, and I just want to say at the end of my final that I was really excited to this class. I'm not a CS major, I'm an economics major, and I was really glad I took it because it just opened up my spectrum of my knowledge, and I'm really glad that I now know the basics of computing, and along with other information about programming that I would never know otherwise.
That's awesome. Are you going to tell your friends?
Yes, all my friends, you have to take it. It's the best class here, no doubt.
That's awesome. Hey, take us out with the Go Bears.
Go Bears!
Woo! So I didn't say, come to me, talk to me. People kept saying, Dan, I need to tell you.
Hi, I'm sitting here with a student who just took the CS10 final.
It was tough, but I studied for it, and hopefully I did good. Before I took CS10, I didn't really know what computer science was. But after, I realized that it's a major that really looks at programming and at the whole world and how computer science actually can affect the whole world in a positive way.
It's amazing.
And it actually made me want to follow a major in EECS. So that's awesome.
That's awesome. Hey, take us out with the Go Bears.
Go Bears!
Hi, I'm talking to a CS10 student who's just finished her final and came up to tell me something.
Hi, I'm Sophia, and I basically just wanted to say that I really, really enjoyed this class. I kind of came into it with not many expectations, just figured it was something that I probably wasn't going to be naturally good at, never having had like a strong background in math and whatnot. And I found that not only did I get kind of these basic programming skills, which like the GSIs were so helpful with teaching, but I also found that like I kind of developed a new perspective on a lot of topics that I otherwise thought I knew a lot about, and that related to my intended major, which is cognitive science. So I felt that like just stuff about the games, math, like nature, biology, neuroscience, and medicine, like it kind of opened up a new world of like possibilities, and like I never really realized the interconnectedness of all these different subjects, and I just thought it was a really like encouraging and kind of inspiring class, so I really enjoyed it and I really recommend it.
Thank you so much. Take us out with the Go Bears.
Go Bears.
I'll show one more. There's 15 of these, okay? I'll just show one more.
All right, we're here with two students who just finished the CS10 final. Tell us your names and tell us what you want to say.
My name is Min. I'm a CS major after CS10, and I totally love this class. How about you, Michael?
Yeah, my name is Michael. I'm in EECS, and I totally love this class. It's like the best start in computer science I think I'll ever.
Michael's from Guatemala.
I can say something in Spanish.
Yeah, you can. Go ahead.
So, para todos los que hablan español, esta clase es la mejor. O sea, si quieren, en verdad, si están interesados en programación, si toman esta clase, ¿cómo lo diría? Se van a enamorar de computer science.
That's awesome.
I also want to say something in Vietnamese.
Oh yeah, go. This is all.
This is all.
Lớp này thật sự được thiết kế cho học sinh và dạy vì học sinh. Thầy Dan là một thầy rất là tuyệt vời. Đây là một trong những lớp vui nhất ở Berkeley và ai cũng nên thích lớp này. Cảm ơn mọi người.
That's awesome. Hey, take us home with the Go Bears. 1, 2, 3.
Go Bears.
Go Bears.
Alright, so I'll stop this one.
I'm with a student.
This was really fun. One more. She's so good. One more. Last one.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Harriet. I'm an engineering physics major, and now because of CS10, which is my first CS class at all, I've had no programming experience. Now I'm probably going to get a CS minor. So.
That's awesome. Hey, take us out with the Go Bears.
Go Bears. Woo!
Alright, and I heard that you have a special thing you were telling your dad about the course?
Yeah, I showed my parents all the projects we've done, and he said that a great idea for a Christmas present for my mom would be to make a bunch of different games in BYOB and give it to her. So that's what I'm going to do.
That's awesome. That's great.
Okay, so that's really exciting, and to have 15 students come up to me and say, Dan, I need to tell you about this course, it was really powerful. I also asked my students to make a YouTube video. At the end of their final project, I said, you know, in the olden days, we could have a celebration where we have food, and then you all stand up, and one by one, they get up and show their project, and it's like this wonderful day of pride. But with 240 students, there's no way that would be a four-day weekend seminar. So I decided to say, why don't we do this? Everybody submits a YouTube video and shares the video with the class. That way you can see what other people did, and we could then review them from our home, and all the staff could look at all these that were submitted. So let me just show you what some of them did. This is incredible. So this is an example of what the things that were done with BYOB.
Hello, this project was created by Hunji Thomas and Lauren Ma. We have created a sound-based application which comes
do you have the word welcome in your database? No. You have well and come? Well, I have well, but not come. So come is So it's breaking them up into the pieces it has to try to find the biggest chunk it has that they recorded. So if they happen to record the word welcome, they'd have that. Later they have CS10 as a word, they have CS10, so you hear that one. But if they can't, they break it up into the biggest piece they can until they have it. And this is just kind of showing you the data structure that are there as they're playing around with it and kind of jumping in. And these are all, the gray border are actual programs. So these are actually programs that just get run. And we're going to be just concatenated together and played all together. So eventually it'll come out. It's a little slow. Welcome. Is that cool? So there's that one. Here's a Sudoku solver, and the students had some fun. I'm sure you've seen Sudoku before, but...
California, man.
Yeah, well, Apple has pretty easy Dragon in the iMovie. You can just do one of these things that... It's a lot of fun with this. CS Education put in the forefront of many students, and we let the top CS10 students present at CS Education Week. So that was just the movie. And then the highlight. I'll start with this one. Hope the sound comes through. Some students, there's a Kinect, you know, the kind of the Microsoft Xbox camera and distance. Blah, blah, blah. They got Kinect to work to Scratch, which works to BYOB since it's the same as Scratch, and they were able to connect that and make a Kinect game for BYOB. When I showed this to Microsoft guy, he was blown away. And it's a Kinect game. So I should show it there. It makes some gestures, and you can see over there.
As I move my hand around.
It's amazing. It's an archery, a really pretty sweet archery game. So he kind of moves his hand to register and get it connected, and then as he's moving his body, he is tilting the bow at the right angle, and when he actually pulls back and releases, I don't know how it knows, but he pulls it back and release, and it'll then shoot an arrow, and it uses real physics to try to shoot the arrow and try to shoot. And I was like, do you have to shoot each other? Do you have to try to hurt? You know, can't you shoot love? You know, can't you pass some love or hearts? No, it had to be arrows and killing each other. But anyway, so that's a three-person project, and that was really cool to be able to.
So was that screen actually done in Scratch too, with the archer and everything?
Yeah, that was all Scratch. That view was art. All they did was figure out how to get a sensor so that
connected the Kinect into Skeleton into Scratch. But that art
was there. That was all there. So the project was there, which isn't so worth it. Just this and tilting and make. But it was cool that it got worked, and it was seamless. It really worked. It was a nice game that was lots of fun. So the potential to kind of go forward with, now that we have the folks at Microsoft are going to give us a couple of Kinects. So the fact that we'll have Kinects around the lab is going to just blow away the kind of projects you might see in the future. Now that they've had the kind of busted through the wall for them. So anyway, conclusion. This is my concluding slide. We're done with CS10. It's complete. The reviews are completely over the roof, over the top. We're going to go online with our online pilot. Does it scale? Yes. The idea is this online course can scale up. The way we can support the CS10K project would be all these high school teachers that need to learn a particular course, that's the AP Principles course, will teach you for free. We have an online course. You can take it for free. It's awesome. We got CE21 money to train people through an 8-week process. We go to your location, to the location where there's maybe 20 high school teachers around, and we give them face-to-face work for a full week, Then we go back, and they go back, and they sit in their home, and they do this six-week online course, which we're already perfecting through the online pilot. Then we come back at the end, and we have summary reflection. They show their projects. We tell them, we talk about how that would map to their high school model of how many weeks they have and kind of map it. So they'll learn it for the first 7 weeks, and then we'll help them map it with that. So that's the model of scaling up and helping the CA21, is really trying to support all these high school teachers which need to know how to teach this AP course, and who's going to help them. Here's a model they can use to grab this great course that really is highly rated. And they can say, you know, our kids don't want to do higher functions, and that's okay, right? I mean, it really is a kind of, we'll allow the pick and choose this for them. We'll give them all of it, and if they really like it, they can try it. But then they say, it's not for us, and here's some more things, great, you know, here's some more testimonials about how great the course should be. So, long story short, we're now looking at this stage in our CE21, we're looking for hubs. So we found a hub around Massachusetts, around 20 high school teachers there, and we're looking at Western New York. We're looking at, so Tiffany Barnes is also from University of North Carolina, so she's has the STARS, and if you're the STARS Alliance, which has universities which have this connection, so she's making use of that to work. So she's working kind of the Eastern Corridor, we're going on the West, and kind of from there. So we're really excited about making these hubs work, because the key thing about a hub is there's a university center core, and then the high schools who are already going to meet at the university for the CST meetings every month, they can get support from each other as they're learning this, and the whole group can learn this course and support each other. So that really is a model that can succeed. We've done that around the Bay Area, and that's the hope that we can kind of replicate that with a central stock and all the flowers around that, with the university being the hub. So thank you so much. That's the project, CS10K, AP Principles, and Beauty and Joy of Computing. Thanks so much, everybody. And I can take questions now. We even have a new logo. Here's our new logo for Beauty Joy Computing. We're really excited about that one. So, any questions at all?
So, I have one. So, AP gives you credit, and then a lot of universities like us allows you to skip the first course with AP credit.
Right. But it's up to each university whether they want to decide to just skip or not.
When your AP doesn't match the first course, given, you know, let's say that our beginning course is broken, according to what you said before, which is fine. But given that the two doesn't match in terms of, you know, our first course is really programming, and you're not getting all of the sort of the Java programs, so how would that jive? Do you have to change the...
That's your first course for majors, right? That's your first course for majors. This is not that. This is the first course for non-majors.
Right, but the AP credit, then, what good does that do for the non-majors? Do they get that for something?
They get 110.
Yeah, it's not a major. The AP Java is not going to change. I mean, it may eventually mutate and change, but this is about the non-major course. If the university has that, it's about the non-major course. It's about trying to replace that.
Would we have then a follow-up course on 110 to try and draw these?
Talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. The CE21, 10,000 new teachers, is that being thwarted somehow by the fact that the high schools aren't hiring computer science teachers? What can be done on that end?
That's a great, great question. So we're in California. The same thing is true. Nobody's going to hire a new teacher. Very rare for that to happen. So the hope is there's somebody already teaching a computing course. Maybe it's the math teacher. Maybe it's the business guy. So it's the person who's teaching probably a course, maybe in keyboarding or PowerPoint or something. It's about taking the person already doing that and training them in this stuff so that they can make it a real course. So it's kind of taking the PowerPoint and Word courses of the world and making them this awesome course. The same person is going to spend the time in the course, but just make the course better. Yeah. And all of a sudden your kids are going through the APs, and all of a sudden you're getting more national support.
From within.
It's a change from who's already doing it. That's the hope. That's number one. Number two is, there's a really incredible Kevin Wang from Microsoft, the person I mentioned got excited about my Kinect connection. He has something called, and I'm blanking on the name now, I can't believe I blanked on the name, it's a five-letter acronym, and the idea is volunteers from industry of all Seattle, Facebook, Boeing, Microsoft, get trained by him in how to teach a computer science course in high school, and volunteer in the morning for 2 hours every day. And they come in, not as the teacher, they don't replace the teacher, the teacher's already there. Teacher might not know how this stuff works, but that programmer knows how stuff works, but may not know how to teach. Between the two of them, they're an amazing combination. That person comes in, and maybe for a year, maybe for a semester, teaches Beauty and Joy of Computing, teaches that work. I'll think of it when it comes to me. Then, 2 years later, they go back into another high school. that person who was learning it by osmosis now can teach it solo. So it's kind of like the PD can happen in situ, which is amazing. That's A. And B, you may have dropout. As you notice with high school teachers, there's a huge dropout rate. In the first 5 years, 50% leave, right? So you end up having a similar thing for these programmers, developers, engineers who get exhausted teaching a high school course. Now, the cool thing is you try to find a bond between where the person lives and where they work and have the high school somewhere in the middle so there's no commute, right? It's literally, I get up in the morning, I go to the school, and then I go to work, and I drive another 5 minutes at most out of my way. So it's really convenient for the developer. It's great for the teacher who gets this great professional development. It's great for the students who are getting this real stuff. And we've just made a connection with him to teach beauty and joy computing in the 23 Seattle schools. So there's a model that could grow to Silicon Valley and other big hubs where there are a lot of developers. Not every place has that. Kansas doesn't have that, but in big central hubs might have that, and that's another way that works, where you have new things coming in. But basically, the idea is it's already people who are there. I mean, part of this is you do try to recruit new people. You know, can we get undergrad majors who don't want to be developers and wouldn't mind trying this out? Can we kind of try to explore that space for our graduates? Because you have to get credentialed. It's hard, right? It's hard to get into the mix. But it's trying to get more teachers in. It's trying to teach teachers already doing that to change. Try to add it from the side of view of the developer side, as I just mentioned. It's every. It's trying to attack it in all ways possible, really. Yeah. It's trying to take people who are getting education degrees to teach them computing, right? So this isn't that much, really. Non-majors are coming out of this being great programmers, right? And I have English majors who've never touched a computer ever, who are giving me testimonials like Justin Barnes in that quote before, saying, "This has changed my life. I love this. I would have done a major in this." So that's only one semester, right? So it's not the case you're going to get the greatest teacher if you only give them one semester of training for this, and they're an English major, never done any computing. But it's better than nothing. Maybe you can get them another semester, then you're working with them, and they'll be learning. Another year, they're better. Then another year, they're better. So you can take a lot of folks who don't know this, who are going to be going to teaching anyway, and kind of teach them some computing as well. So it's kind of coming at a CS teacher from education here, or a computer person who doesn't know teaching, bring it over. So it's like coming in from both angles from that. Good. Thanks, everybody. Good stuff.